Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. David Prince to the podcast. Dr. Prince is the pastor of preaching and vision at Ashland Avenue Baptist Church and also serves as a professor of Christian preaching at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Dr. Prince is an accomplished preacher. He's written much on topics of hermeneutics and preaching and pastoral ministry more broadly. But most recently, he's written a new book entitled In the Arena, The Promise of Sports for Christian Discipleship. And that is going to be the topic of our conversation today. Dr. Prince, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, David, I have for some time been wanting to have a podcast recording with you on the issue, the topic of preaching, and so many different directions we could go with that. And we'll save that for another day, because the presenting issue before us today and the reason for this conversation is your new book, In the Arena, The Promise of Sports for Christian Discipleship. Now, you kindly asked me to blurb this book for you, and I was happy to do it. And I read the book 6 months or so ago, but when I got it in the mail the other day, I just reviewed it again and was struck by how much I appreciated the book and how I thought there were legitimate lines to draw from this book to the topic of pastoral ministry, certainly local church ministry, and perhaps even to some degree the life and disciplines of the preacher himself. And so this is a little different. You know, typically the topics on this broadcast, on this podcast, are more directly related to local church ministry, but this book is so well done, and I just thought there's a lot this book has to offer those who listen to the podcast. Now, let me give another word of introduction here, and I'm here to converse with you and ask you questions, but just to set the stage a touch more, even personally, I grew up in a sports home, two older brothers. So three sons. We all three play college basketball. We grew up as kids playing baseball and football to a lesser degree, but all of us really zeroed in on basketball as we came into middle school and high school. And so sports were in the air. We weren't as teenagers up late at night reading books. We weren't as teenagers playing the clarinet or the flute or the drums. Music wasn't our thing, and sports were our thing. And so for me, it just shaped me then and continues to shape me now as far as how I view the world, characteristics that were developed in me, characteristics that, frankly, were really drilled in me by my father and by coaches. And so I think there's a lot of applicability for this topic, and I'm so glad you've engaged it from such a biblical and theological with such a biblical and theological approach.
Thanks.
So let me ask you, what prompted you to write the book in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, my story is similar to yours. I grew up in Alabama, and sports were just what we did in my home. My dad loved sports, and the earliest picture I have as a child in the crib, there's a baseball laying right beside me. And so that's just what we did. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, but I grew up in a home that was where my parents spent tons of time with us, and most of it revolved around sports. So sports was just kind of the air that I breathed as well. I would say that I had kind of a sports idolatry, that I got my identity from playing sports, which is unhealthy. But at the same time, I'm thankful that sports were kind of a part of my life. But when I became a Christian, I was playing baseball in college, and immediately I started to ask myself, should I still do this? Should this be a part of my life? Should this be a focus? Or is this something that I should walk away from or give up as a Christian? And I've been wrestling with those issues for 30 years now. Now I'm a father of eight, and I've had to decide the relationship between sports and our family life. And so I've been thinking about this all these years. And it's one of those things I think that the church has done a really poor job of helping people navigate and think about. When you think about the primary metaphors for what it means to walk with God and to be the people of God, you have warfare imagery. The whole biblical storyline is spiritual warfare. So the soldier imagery is there. You have the farming, the agrarian imagery, the idea that we do all that we can and we pray for it to rain, we depend upon God. But third, you have athletics imagery that keeps showing up again and again. I often do conferences and I say, okay, raise your hand if you've ever been a soldier. A couple of hands go up. Raise your hand if you've made your living farming or your family sustenance was farming. Maybe one or two hands go up. Raise your hand if you've ever competed in athletics. Almost every hand goes up. So we've got to, in my mind, figure out what that means for our faith. And in terms of preaching, this is the one key metaphor with most of the people we preach to have a point of contact with. And yet so little has been done with teaching people how to take every thought captive in relation to sports in obedience to Christ. And so that's what I'm trying to work out and work through here.
Now, the subtitle of your book is The Promise of Sports for Christian Discipleship. And, of course, that's what the book is about. So this is a pretty big question, but perhaps you can refine your answer just to really get at the thesis of the book. What is the promise of sports for Christian discipleship?
Yeah, the promise is that sports provides this limited but genuine theater that demands all the characteristics that you need to live a godly life. So sports, I like to say sports don't build character, but sports expose character. And if you're going to intentionally try to cultivate Christian character and point toward the gospel, sports are an incredible vehicle. When you think about the imagery in the Bible, what it links to in relation to our faith is that sports demand rigorous training, singleness of purpose, a willingness to work hard and delay gratification, self-control, perseverance, endurance. All of those things are necessary for us and provide powerful links for us to, if we're leading our children in sports, to point them to what matters more. What matters most to us, but it's a wonderful proving ground and a wonderful training ground to where we can see these characteristics and try to leverage them for the sake of the gospel in the lives of our children, or if we're the athletes as we participate in it, or even as fans as we watch it and consider our own lives.
Now, as we record this, in just a matter of days, the college football season will officially begin. And your Alabama Crimson Tide will be playing USC, and my Auburn Tigers, I'm afraid, will be getting victimized by Clemson, and it'll be upon us. And every man that pastors in the South, and many of those listening to this podcast do, they know what it's like to come into church on a Sunday morning after a high-energy Saturday of college football, and there just being a low ebb, a focus of energy, of eagerness in the building. How should the pastor process that phenomenon, especially those that pastors in the state of Alabama or Georgia, where you know college football is so big? How should they process that phenomenon, and how should they encourage their church to view college sports, especially college football?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because absolutely, when I pastored in Alabama, you know, if the majority favorite team in the church, particularly if they lose, at times there would be sort of a low energy, which is sad. I mean, a part of what it means to teach our people about the powerful metaphor that sports can be for our faith is to also teach them the danger of sports becoming an idol in our lives. And so I tell our men all the time, and our people in general, that you know, there are some basic tests for you as to whether or not this is becoming out of kilter in your affections. And that is, if you cannot have your favorite team lose and still enjoy having watched the competition, that's a problem. Or if you never learn anything or see anything that causes you to think about your own life and your own commitment, you know, I'm always struck by, if your team doesn't win, the coach needs to always be working harder, is the narrative. But do we think about the fact that we work for the glory of God? And are we doing everything we can in excellence in our own job, in our own profession? And the other thing, if as a parent, if your team loses and your kid thinks you're going to be in a bad mood the rest of the day, sports have become an idol. And certainly, if you show up at church on Sunday in a bad mood celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ, because if you're like me and Alabama is your favorite team, USC happens to upset them in the first game of the season, that's a problem. Sports are like so many other things. They provide a great opportunity for us to think about our faith, but they easily become something that we corrupt God's good gift of. I love Theodore Roosevelt, and Theodore Roosevelt said, "Athletic proficiency is a mighty good servant, and like so many other good servants, a mighty bad master." And not just athletic proficiency, but enjoyment of athletics as well. And so we've got to teach and train our people how to think about these things and how to enjoy them to the glory of God rather than them becoming something that drives us away from God.
You know, this summer I read Dave McCullough's book, Mornings on Horseback, which came out, I guess, originally some 30 years ago, and it's the biography of Teddy Roosevelt as a young man, his parents, his grandparents, and especially his life up until about the time he went to the White House. But even as I was reading that book, that biography, again, you see almost page to page how Roosevelt's father and then ultimately Teddy Roosevelt himself intentionally used physical rigor, physical activity, and sports to develop character and to develop manhood. And it really helped to make him who he was. And, you know, there's a reason why his face is on Mount Rushmore. There with Lincoln and Washington and Jefferson. People often forget, but he was one of our premier presidents and was so adored, especially, you know, obviously the early part of the 20th century. But here's where I want to go. I want to come back to you, the father and also the pastor, the man who loves Teddy Roosevelt, the man who appreciates sports, and connect some dots here and ask you to help us connect dots. So you have eight children. You pastor a local church. I know your children are involved in sports because I know you, and I see, you know, the occasional social media posts and things with pictures of your kids, your daughters playing tennis and whatnot. Help us think through, first and foremost, as pastors, but also just as Christians and church members. How do we handle it when tennis practice conflicts with, you know, Wednesday night youth group? How do we handle it when travel baseball conflicts with the Lord's Day on Sunday? And I suppose you're going to work hard not to be too legalistic here, or be overly prescriptive, but at the same time, feel free to speak freely. Speak to us with as much clarity and as much force as you're comfortable giving.
Yeah. You know, what I always try to tell people is you are not the victim of the sports team's calendar and schedule. And you're also not the victim of the church's programming schedule. Now, the Lord's Day is the Lord's Day, and we, at least I have a theology of the Lord's Day, which means that in our family we've committed that we don't miss the Lord's Day for sports or really anything else. And so that means that the number of tennis tournaments my kids can play are limited. And if they're asked to be on the travel baseball team, we say, hey, listen, we're thankful for that, but we don't skip church to play. We know a lot of the tournaments, championship games are on Sunday. But we won't do that. So if that's a reason you don't want them to be on the team, they won't be on the team. Or if they make all-stars at the local park the same way. But see, that's me leading my family. And it's also me training my kids how to think and set priorities when they're adults. I don't think that the solution to that is just simply to pull out of athletics because it makes things easier. Because life is challenging and difficult. What I found in the leagues that we deal with, that if we're upfront and honest, we're actually respected more. Because, I mean, you know me, I'm a baseball guy, and so we're all in as far as baseball. I got a batting cage and a pitching machine in my backyard. And yet we do not play on the teams that would demand that we miss church on Sunday. We're just not going to do it, because if baseball is a way for me to give a window for my children into faith or tennis, then I certainly don't teach them the wrong thing when I choose baseball or tennis over my faith. But at the same time, you take, for instance, Wednesday night. I don't have any theology of Wednesday night. It's just a practical thing that a lot of churches do that's helpful in a variety of ways. And so if I see a family at our church on Wednesday night and I say, hey, where's your kid? And they say they've got a ball game. I'm like, why are you here? Go be a Christian in the stands. You know, there need to be Christians at the ballpark. So live out your faith. And so we try to draw lines where the Bible draws them, but not draw them where the Bible doesn't draw them, and encourage people to integrate their faith in light of this. And the other question I get a lot is about busyness. You know, yes, you can certainly be too busy, but I don't think about, for instance, my kids' participation in sports as pulling against their faith. Rather, if we're driving to the ballgame and we're saying, how can you glorify God on the field today? What would that look like? And what we're looking for is not performance, but we're looking for effort and self-sacrifice and commitment and respect to coaches and umpires. Then we evaluate those things after the game. Then these things are how we're living out our faith. They're not pulling against our faith. And so we try to reclaim those times for spiritual growth and development. But do not blame sports because of an unwillingness to lead your family. Or don't blame sports because you have a sort of cowardly fear of stating your convictions and priorities to the people that you're dealing with. That's not a sports problem. That's a larger problem with leadership and with courage.
I love how you classify the Lord's Day in contradistinction to, let's say, a Wednesday night activity. And I entirely share your sentiment there and your assessment. In different stages of life for us, and different stages of ministry, Wednesday nights have been absolutely indispensable. Don't miss. Other stages of life, Wednesday nights haven't been. That's not a statement about that church. It's a statement of our family, what I was trying to accomplish in our kids at that age, what else we had going on as a family, and we were faithful in our churchmanship on the Lord's Day and giving and serving and all the other ways. But I definitely maintain a distinction in my mind between Sunday, the Lord's Day, and Wednesday night. I also love how you said, we're not victims of sports. And I still remember a conversation I had with a church member about close to 10 years ago now. It was after church on a Sunday morning, and this couple had four or five kids, as I recall, and they had a daughter that was very involved in hockey, and they were sort of marginally involved in the church. They were, you know, there maybe twice a month as a family. And I still remember the father telling me after church one Sunday, I said, it's great to see you here today. And, you know, he said, yes. And we were just exchanging civilities. And then he said, yeah, I just want to give you a heads up. We won't be here this fall. My daughter's hockey league. No, he said, my daughter's hockey league's on Sundays. And so, you know, we're not going to be here for the next few months. And he said it like a victim. And he said, you know, this. I'm just so frustrated with this hockey league. And I said to him, I said, you have choices. You can choose not to participate in hockey or find a league that meets someday other than Sunday. But hockey, you don't work for hockey. Hockey should work for you. And so you have a choice in this. But that mentality and that exchange we had, that is showing up in churches across America, and especially the Deep South. And, you know, my point is not to get into a kind of a boycott mentality. We're all going to boycott the Little League because they interrupt our Sunday. My point is we each need to lead our family intentionally. And if, let's say, Little League happens on Sunday and that interrupts and precludes the Lord's Day worship for your family, then you need to make that choice not to do Little League on Sunday. And what I have found in a couple of other occasions is our kids have done sports. If I just have respectfully said, you know, I'm serving a local church, or, you know, sir, we're believers and we're going to be committed to this team. And whenever I'm in town, I'm going to be here, not only dropping off my son at practice, I'm going to be at practice. I'm happy to help in any way. Mm-hmm. But Sunday morning for us, we go to church together. And so we will not be able to participate if there's practice or game on Sunday morning. And as I have done that, there is, on a couple of occasions, it's enabled a couple of other players to kind of, you know, be jolted to attention and say, yeah, well, we share that as well. And then the coach was happy to accommodate and say, well, since we got three families to go to church on Sunday, we're not going to practice on Sunday mornings. And it rolled pretty naturally just because I had the temerity just to say, you know, respectfully, Sunday morning is kind of no-go zone for us. And so we want to participate, want to serve, want to be faithful in every way. But Sunday morning for us, we just can't be a part of what's going on.
Sure. And in so doing, you're teaching your children how to prioritize their lives in a way where they're going to face similar decisions when they're adults. You can't avoid that. That's actually a positive. I tell my kids all the time, you know, faith has consequences, and we're perfectly willing to accept the consequences of our faith. So my kid makes the all-star team, and I say, well, we don't skip church on Sundays, and they say they don't want them on the team. We say, okay, that's no problem. They don't have to be on that team. But that's just simply a matter of leadership. But it's easy to blame the activity because that's external to us. But I affirm exactly what you're saying. You're training your children by doing that. You're also not a victim of what they want to do in the moment. You know, I've had parents tell me, well, you know, I don't want to tell them they can't play in the championship games on Sundays. Well, okay, but you're training them if you're unwilling to say that to them. And it's in a way that's unhealthy.
Right. You know, the abdication of parental leadership is just rampant, not only in society, but in our churches, unfortunately. Well, hey, I want to draw some lines here, and I'm going to ask you to draw some lines. How are you a better preacher because of your participation in sports as a kid?
Yeah, I would say a lot of in a lot of ways, because one of the things that you get from sports is the reality of community and the reality that it takes a lot of really different type of people on these sports teams for them to be successful and effective. So you don't just need the smartest guy, even though a smart guy does good. You don't just need the strongest guy. You don't just need the quickest guy. You need to put all of that together and have everybody embrace their role and do their part. And so I think that through what I learned in sports growing up, it helps me to value all kinds of people with all kinds of different gifting, and for me to see the church through a lens that's more helpful to me. And I say unapologetically that I had a great time in seminary, getting my master's degree at Southwestern, got my PhD at Southern. Day-to-day pastoral ministry, I learned more through my engagement with sports as an athlete and my coaching of high school sports before I went to seminary, and just day-to-day functional leadership of dealing with diverse people, trying to help people understand how to exercise their own gifts and communicating to people that everybody has value. Only you can be you surrendered to Jesus, and we need you to be that. You are your own strategic ministry opportunity. All of those things are a direct outflow of my life that's been embedded with the reality of thinking through sports and teams and how to be a part of that and how to train my kids to think that way as well.
And a part of that is learning to be committed to people. And I remember a couple of years ago, my son's little league game, and it was one of these games we were going late, and I think he was like 8 or 9 years old then. And the coach made a comment, you know, that it was one of these scenarios where they rotate the kids through and kind of every kid gets to play. And so my son had played his innings, quote unquote, and there were still like 2 innings left in the game, though, but he wasn't getting to play the field anymore. He was still batted, but it was kind of the coach was rotating the kids through. And so we knew him and a few other kids had kind of had their turn in the field. And the coach said, now it's getting kind of late. He kind of whispered to the parents in the stands and said, if your kids who've already played, if you want to go ahead and take them home so they can get to bed, I understand that, you know. And my wife and I, we had a kind of a learning experience there, and she was like, "Oh yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get home." And I said, "Sweetie, we're not about to take our son out of the dugout home." And right. I mean, there's no, that's not what sports are. You're there with your teammates till the end. And you know, she kind of was looking at me funny, like, "Well, you know, this isn't major leagues. He's 8 years old." And I said, "Yeah, but there's a learning experience here. You don't leave just because it's getting late and you've already had your turn in the field." And then, boy, there's a whole other bigger category of the psychology of every kid should get to play, and every kid gets equal playing time and rotating through. And, man, we had some learning experiences there and some challenges along the way with coaches that would not rightly incentivize winning and discipline yourself to pursue winning. Not that winning is the end of everything, but life has episodes and seasons and contexts where you win and lose. And if you don't learn how to win and lose in a little league baseball game, how are you going to learn how to win and lose in business or in the local church?
Yeah, you know, there was the time my kid made the middle school basketball team, and he'd worked really hard to do it, and he was all excited. And then the games came, and he was never playing. So he started slumping his shoulders and acting like he was disengaged. And we're riding home one day, and I said, you seem kind of down. He said, yeah, I'm not playing. I said, do you know why you're not playing? He said, no, why? I said, you're not very good. I said, if the coach were playing you a lot, I would be making an appointment with him to ask him why he's not trying to win the games. Your role on this team is not to be one of the better players, because you're not. But that doesn't mean you can't have an important role on this team. So let's talk about what it means to glorify God even when you're a player who spends most of your time on the bench. And the truth is, most of us are role players in life. That's not a crisis. That's an opportunity. But you've got to think in that way.
You know, Dr. Prince, there was an episode of my life that I actually recounted in my new book that's just come out, Discerning Your Call to Ministry. And I tell new student orientation every fall and spring semester, and it's a sports analogy. And I talk about my two older brothers that are 6 and 8 years older. And as I was a kid, 8 years old, 10 years old, I would dabble in sports, but wasn't taking that serious. But my brothers, who were then 16 and 18 and going to college and playing college basketball, they were super serious and excelling. And I just assumed, well, I'm tall and my last name's Allen and they play college basketball. And so I guess when I grew up, I'll play college basketball. And people would even ask me, are you going to play basketball? I'd say, yeah, I'm going to play. And I remember my dad one time, and I was probably 10 years old, give or take a year, and a very serious conversation. He said, do you want to play college basketball? I hear you telling people that. And I said, well, yes, sir. And he said, well, you don't just walk on the court when you're 18 and become a college basketball player. Your brothers didn't do that. You will not do it either. It starts now. It starts in the backyard practicing now. It starts in the weight room now. It starts in the gymnasium now. And it's, if you're dedicated and devoted and disciplined and you practice and work hard, then 6, 8 years down the road, maybe you'll be a college athlete and earn a scholarship. But it doesn't just happen. And I tell our students that analogy to say, look, you don't graduate from seminary, get a diploma, get a degree, and then kind of announce your ministerial acumen to a church.
That's right.
You prove yourself now in your local church. And even if you're not getting to preach every Sunday, you can serve your local church. You can, for heaven's sake, work in the nursery. You can be a greeter. And if you just show up eager and ready to invest in your local church, that local church, 9 times out of 10, will be ready to invest in you and give you opportunities to minister. And so you wake up one day, and ministry isn't something you're going to go into. Ministry is something you're already in because you've been doing it.
Right. That's fantastic. I do the same things. You know, I have a son who plays baseball, and every now and then I'll walk up to him and say, what did you do today to become a better baseball player? If you're going to do it, let's get after it. My kids who play tennis, what did you do today specifically to become a better tennis player or whatever they're involved in? But I also do that with the interns at our church that we're pouring into. You know, what did you do today to help us accomplish our mission here? How are we more effective because of the way you invested your life and time today? And so those lessons are absolutely vital to think about our lives in just that way. It doesn't just happen. And in a culture of entitlement, where very few people are thankful for anything, we've got to kick against that with everything we've got. And sports is a great outlet to do it, but there is no more important outlet to do it than the church.
Well, Dr. Prince, I could talk to you all day about this because so many different passions of mine intersect, and I'm just so thankful for your book. To those listening, I want to commend it to you once again. The author, of course, is David Prince. The title of the book is In the Arena, The Promise of Sports for Christian Discipleship. It is published by B&H, and you can get it through Amazon. You can get it at your local Lifeway, and I'm sure most any Christian bookstore you can get it. And I just want to commend it to you. Among the topics that Dr. Prince engages in the book includes these chapters: Why Sports Matter, Sports and Fandom, Sports and Spiritual Warfare, Sports and Christian Discipleship, Sports and Self-Esteem, Sports and Safety. I love that chapter, by the way. And Sports and the Church. Dr. Prince, thank you for the conversation. Thank you for the work. And more broadly, thank you for your ministry to the church. It's been a delight to have you on Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you so much. Honored to be with you.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.